Crimson Swan Studios presents Lilith's Love by Dan Charette, read by the author, and featuring the voice talents of
Michelle Sully,
Danny Cutler,
CJ Fire-Robind,
Dan Fire-Robind,
Bob Gallagher,
Jack Hosley,
Carl Long,
Jack Mangan.
To die, to sleep, perchance to dream, aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death what dreams may come, when we have shuffled off this mortal coil, must give us pause. William Shakespeare, The Tragedy of Hamlet, Prince of Denmark. Chapter 12. Looking down the barrel of Jake's revolver, many thoughts passed through Don's mind. Many questions demanded to be answered. But he summed them all up with one word. Why? Jake frowned as if he wished it didn't have to be this way. He waved the gun in Lilith's direction and said,
Because of her. The Master wants her for some reason. I don't know why. It's none of my business. But what is my business is getting what the Master wants. And now, frankly, you two,
he said as he waved the gun in front of Don and Anna,
are liabilities. Both of you have outlived your usefulness to me.
He moved his gun to point at Anna's chest.
Wait! She may still be useful to you. Remember, you still have Chris to deal with. I don't know what plans you or the Master have for Chris, or Lilith for that matter. But Anna is still valuable to you.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to save your life.
By risking your own? I won't let you do it.
Foolish, noble mortals. You shall both get your chance to die, but he's right. You may yet be of use to me.
He pointed the gun back at Don and said,
Your noble gesture has been noted and accepted.
Jake squeezed the trigger, firing a bullet square into Don's chest. During the entire confrontation, Lilith was wondering just who this Master was and what he wanted from her. She thought she would gladly do what he wanted if he would just spare her friends. However, the blast of the gunshot brought her screaming back to the situation at hand. She ran over to catch Don and lower him gently to the ground. Jake lowered his gun as the tiniest amount of conscience made him question what he had just done. In that split second, Anna took advantage of his weakness and knocked the gun from his hand, kicked him in the groin, and ran off into the shadows.
Damn, that hurt!
Jake cried out, holding his crotch protectively.
The Master's gonna hurt me worse if I don't find her.
He tried to walk off the pain, and he started looking for Anna, or his gun. Whichever came first. Meanwhile, Lilith cried as she laid Don's head in her lap, looking up at her. His eyes couldn't stay open, so he whispered to her,
I love you, Lily.
She tried to smile as she said,
I love you, Don.
He opened his eyes, surprised that she didn't call him Xander. In that moment, he realized that she truly loved him, no matter who he was, then or now. He smiled, and then went limp in her arms.
No!
She noticed that the amethyst in Don's ankh continued to glow brighter. She was saddened even more by the ironic fact that this silver and amethyst symbol of life should glow so brightly when Don's life had been extinguished. She wondered why the damn thing was glowing at all.
I believe I could answer that question for you, Lilith,
said a deep voice in the shadows. Lilith looked up but didn't see anybody in the room, candlelit or not. She assumed, however, that it was the Master speaking to her.
Very perceptive,
answered the deep voice, this time coming from another direction. At least so Lilith thought. Upon closer concentration, she realized that the voice was all around her. she shouted out.
Okay, Hotshot, what's with the yonk?
A deep laugh rumbled throughout the room. Then the candles burst into brighter light. Lilith observed their spontaneous and simultaneous burst, then turned back to look at the center of the room, and was surprised to find a cloaked figure standing in front of her. The figure extended an arm down and took a hold of the glowing ankh around Dawn's neck. He pulled quick, snapping the chain, and observed it closer. Lilith laid Dawn's head down on the cold, concrete floor and stood up to face the hooded, cloaked vampire in front of her.
It isn't a protection from vampires.
Au contraire. It seems to be a magical warning sign. And you know what they say. Forewarned is forearmed.
That lot of good it did,
she decided. The glow of the amethyst began to cast eerie violet shadows on what little area of his face was not covered by his hood. She looked at him sternly and asked him,
Okay, just who the hell are you?
He pulled the hood back and revealed a face that was familiar to her. She didn't recognize him immediately. His hair was cut short in a modern style, but eventually the realization dawned on her. She remembered the face of the vampire that made her what she is today. She doubted that it could be him, since she thought him to be dead 300 years ago. But there was no doubt about it. It was him. Her master. An old haunt of Michael's turned up nothing. Nobody that he had asked knew about Mary Jane or her master. What's worse is he knew they were telling the truth, so he didn't get to rough anyone up. After about an hour of solid detective work on his side of town, Michael was convinced to give it up and find Malcolm.
Maybe he's had better luck,
he thought. As he was starting to float up into the night sky, eastbound, he thought of Lilith. His mind was already on her and her friends, of course, but this was out of the blue. So strong was the image that he drifted back down to the dimly lit street corner. He focused on her, and he felt that she might be in danger. The blood they shared out of necessity had formed a bond between them. In this case, he decided to believe that, if nothing else, Lilith had found who she was looking for.
Worst case scenario, she may really be in danger.
With all haste, he took to the sky again. Swiftly, he flew eastward to tell Malcolm. Together, they would find Lilith and help her. Mary Jane sat in the chair across from the bed that Chris was sleeping in. His heartbeat, even though slowed by his resting, was pounding a deafening rhythm into her brain. Across the small room, she could smell the blood pumping through him. She remembered a time when she and Chris were first dating, and he joked that he wondered if she was a vampire because of the bright red hickeys she would give him. Now, she was doing everything she could not to give in to the longing to give him one last hickey, to make his sick joke ring true. For the first time since she was given the gift, she saw it as the curse it truly was. She knew she didn't have much time left with him, and her desires got the best of her. Slowly she walked over to the bed, her canines extended because of her arousal. She couldn't help it. She still found him very attractive. However, more than her libido was craving him now, she needed his blood. She climbed onto the bed and crawled on top of him until she was directly over him. She felt his warm body close to her cold flesh. His heartbeat was driving her mad with hunger. She licked her lips as the smell of his blood pushed her over the edge. Her resistance was down. She couldn't stand the pain any longer. She licked the spot directly above his carotid artery. She turned his head to the right and bit deep into his neck. Feeling the pain of the bite, Chris woke up abruptly to find Mary Jane in the corner of the room, laughing.
Just sleep well?
It was all a dream. Upset, he yelled at her.
You bitch! How could you violate my dreams like that?
It was only too easy, my dear, and what makes you think that it didn't happen?
Hearing that, he was shocked to find a small trail of blood on her bottom lip. Quickly, he put a hand to his neck to feel for any traces. He brought his hand back to view it, cringing as to what he might find. He breathed a sigh of relief when he didn't find his hand stained with his blood. She laughed again at the expression on his face. Then she shivered as her master summoned her.
It's time to go, beloved.
Go where? I'm not going anywhere with you.
She looked him straight in the eyes and said,
It's not far. It's just outside that door, in fact.
He couldn't help getting out of bed and following her to the door. She opened the door, and it led to a dark hallway. At the end of the darkness, Mary Jane saw the flicker of candlelight.
Straight ahead,
she told him. He obeyed. Lilith's confusion gave way to her anger when she found out that the vampire that made her was standing here in front of her. She didn't know what he wanted, but she had a pretty good idea. Revenge.
That's right. I'm here to settle an old score. I've been keeping tabs on you, my dear. Massachusetts, New York, Georgia, Louisiana, and now Arizona. Why did you come here, of all places?
Those damn vampire hunters. I figured I'd go somewhere those fanatics would never expect to find a vampire. The Valley of the Sun.
Clever. But wasn't there more to it than that?
She wondered what he was getting at. She looked down at Dawn and wondered aloud.
Do you mean Dawn?
Dawn? Was that his name in this incarnation?
A smug grin crept over the master's face. Surprised, she asked.
You mean you know about that?
Of course I did. My mind is open to many possibilities. It comes from living, or, well, you know, for as long as I have. But I know something you don't know.
And that smug grin returned to his face as he walked backwards a few steps. Lilith didn't realize it, but she followed the master, walking around Dawn's body, to stay with his conversation.
What's that?
That this was not the first time that Alexander was reincarnated.
What? When did he...
Each time you settled into a new home. Unfortunately, you two kept missing each other. Until now.
My God, why are you telling me this?
Because it has taken me 300 years to finally take him away from you as your punishment. I waited until you two finally crossed paths and fell in love again. For the pain you caused me 300 years ago... I returned it to you, threefold.
She looked back at Dawn, emotionally shattered. She turned back to the master as he said,
Now I give you a new opportunity to join me as my bride. Together we can suckle the blood of kings and gods. Forget these mortals and come to my side.
She gave him her answer by spitting in his face. He smiled as he wiped the spittle away. Then he slapped her face with the same wet hand. She bared her fangs in an attempt to attack him. Yet, with a simple thought, a sharp, crippling pain shot through her. He smiled again, made even more menacing now by his own extended canines, and said,
Tsk, tsk, Lilith. Do you think I would give you an opportunity to finish what you started 300 years ago?
He started to walk away, but turned around to watch her writhe in pain on the floor.
I think not,
he said, and he tossed the Ankh at Lilith. As the pain filled every joint, every muscle, she realized that the master was the source of her previous 2 painful attacks.
But why did he do it before?
Those were merely tests, my dear. You see, I've been here in Phoenix for the last 10 years. When I found out your beloved's latest incarnation was here, it was then that I set the wheels into motion, preparing for your eventual arrival. I decided that Don's friend Chris would be handy as a pawn, as would Chris's girlfriend Mary Jane. Why, I even drove the car that killed Don's parents.
With those words, Don's eyes opened. He could feel the world around him come into sharp focus. He blanked his mind and prayed that he wouldn't attract the master's attention. He just lay there, hearing the proud beast describe his crimes. At the same time, he enjoyed the experiences of his new heightened senses. He heard footsteps of two people enter the room, one human, one vampire. He didn't know how he could tell. He just knew.
Well, speaking of the lovely couple, here they come.
Chris walked in, eyes glazed over, followed by Mary Jane.
Lilith here has refused to join us. For that she must die. But first, a little entertainment.
The master turned to face his disciple, pointed to Chris, and commanded her,
"Kill him."
"What? You told me that he would be mine."
"Do as I command,"
he scolded her. She couldn't do anything but his bidding, so against her will, against her desires to keep him for herself, she bared her fangs and prepared to attack. Out of the shadows, a female voice shouted,
"No!"
Anna charged out of the shadows with a sharpened stake and aimed for Mary Jane or the master. She didn't care which. But before Anna even came within feet of either one, Jake ran out of the shadows where he was searching, grabbed Anna tight, and dragged her kicking and screaming to his master. The master stared deep into her eyes and stole her willpower with a thought. She dropped the stake, then stood there like a beautiful mannequin. Jake took the backpack off of the frozen Anna. The master nodded to Jake to step aside. The master turned back to Mary Jane and said,
"Now, my dear, you can kill the boy that left you and the witch he left you for."
She felt the need to exact her revenge on them, but her love for Chris surfaced again. She knew that it was because she dumped him that Chris found new love in Anna. She finally understood that the master was using her all along. Furious, she yelled her defiance.
"No, I won't do it. This is all your fault."
She grabbed the stake that Anna dropped and decided to use it against her master. Unfortunately, he was physically too strong for her. He grabbed her arm firmly and stopped her cold. He then took hold of the stake, pointed it away from him and toward her. Swiftly, he plunged the stake into her chest. At that moment, Mary Jane's power over Chris was removed. When he became aware of what had happened, he realized that he had little time to react. He decided his best hope would be to feign continued hypnosis and blank his mind. The master, who was enjoying killing the beautiful traitor, didn't notice Chris's condition. As the pain shot throughout her dying body, stopping her undead heart from beating, Mary Jane kneeled to the ground and slowly collapsed to one side. The master, being distracted, also didn't happen to notice that Lilith was slowly overcoming the pain that he inflicted earlier. She wasn't sure if she was learning to cope with it, or if, by some wonderful possibility, the ankh that he tossed at her might have been the cause of her returning strength. In either case, she was, by this time, completely free from the pain. When Lilith saw the master stake Mary Jane, she screamed out,
"No! Damn it, no!"
It didn't matter that she hated Mary Jane for what she did. She didn't deserve to die like that. Not here, and not now. Jake walked over to shut her up, but before he had the chance, he was staked from behind. As Jake fell to the ground, clutching the protruding point in front of him, he turned to see who did it. The surprised look on his face when he felt the stake run through him was exaggerated when he found Dawn standing there. Dawn grabbed Anna's backpack from Jake's dying arms and opened it. He grabbed another stake and tossed it to Lilith. It was her turn to set everything right. As the master turned away from Mary Jane's body to see what Lilith was shouting about, he found Lilith and Dawn standing over Jake's body and looking intently in the master's direction. The master then realized, only too late, that Lilith had turned Dawn into a vampire. Dawn quickly ran over to where Chris and Anna were and stood between them and the master. The master was fairly impressed by Dawn's speed. Dawn impressed himself as well. Feeling slightly cocky with his new powers, he almost demanded,
"These two had nothing to do with what happened 300 years ago. Leave them out of this. It isn't fair."
"Fair? My dear boy, whoever said life or death was fair? They made excellent bait, I think."
Lilith called from behind the master.
"Speaking of being unfair..."
The master spun around and got a stake square in the chest for his trouble. A look of surprise and disgust washed over his face. Then, as his complexion became even whiter than it was before, he chuckled. It came out in spurts as he coughed. As the pain shot throughout his chest, washing over his body, he slowly regained some composure and a wide grin appeared. The pain contorting his hands, he tried desperately to bring his arms in front of his chest. He was straining to grip the protruding end of the stake. When he realized that his hands weren't going to wrap around the end, he laughed uneasily and knelt down. In between difficult breaths, he said,
You don't actually think that, stake in the heart will kill me, do you?"
He coughed up a small bit of blood, then smiled as he licked it back up from his lip and added,
"I'm too old. Eventually, I'll pull this out and be after you again, both of you."
Don's eyes widened as he heard the damn thing threaten him and Lilith. He asked her,
"So now what can we do? If the wooden stake won't kill him, what will?"
Lilith solemnly shrugged.
"I honestly don't know. I've never known a vampire his age. Hell, I didn't even really know him."
That wasn't what Dawn wanted to hear. Just then, a loud thud echoed throughout the candlelit room.
"What was that?"
Dawn asked as the noise pounded into his new sensitive eardrums. As one thud quickly followed another with a crack, Lilith answered,
"Sounds like someone's trying to get in."
A door to the left of the room had a good chunk of it chopped away as Lilith finished.
"With an axe."
With enough of the door and the planks outside it out of the way, Michael kicked the door away and ran inside, with Malcolm behind him. Michael stopped next to Lilith and said,
"Malcolm thought this might come in handy."
He looked down at the master in his kneeling position and thought that Lilith should have the pleasure of finishing him off. He handed the sharp wood axe to her. The master's eyes widened as he cried out,
"No!"
Lilith swung the blade wide and sliced true, decapitating her former master. As the ancient vampire's headless body collapsed to its side, Anna came out of her trance. As she regained partial control over her limbs, her knees gave out. From the corner of his eye, Chris saw Anna start to go down, and he turned to catch her. She hugged him to hold on to him and steady herself. In a moment, comforted by Chris's strength, she was fine. Lilith handed the axe back to Michael and then hugged Dawn. Together, they realized that it was finally over. Dawn saw the ankh in Lilith's clenched fist, and everyone watched as the purple glow faded away, as the master's power died with him. Chris looked around him as he held Anna tight. He saw three dead vampires, one of whom was Mary Jane. He couldn't help but feel sorry for her. No matter what she got them all into, he knew she really wasn't responsible. He silently prayed for her peaceful rest. He hugged Anna just a little tighter then, and Anna knew what he was feeling. As they all headed out of the warehouse, Malcolm turned to look at Jake's body and said,
"I knew he was trouble. I should have known he would lead you to a trap."
"Don't blame yourself, Malcolm. He may have intended to lead us here, but this Ankh was how we found the place."
Malcolm didn't understand, but smiled when Lilith said,
"I'll tell you later."
Malcolm noticed Dawn's bloody gunshot wound and asked,
"I take it that Jake shot you?"
"Yes, but I'm feeling much better now."
Then he let his eyes glow just a little red and winked. Everyone, including Chris, understood. Lilith cleared her throat as if to ask if Dawn needed to be accepted into Malcolm's domain, to which Malcolm said,
"Dawn has ties to the Valley that I have no right to break."
"Thank you, Voivode," Dawn said as he bowed.
"You know, I think I'm going to need a new bartender. You interested, Dawn?"
Dawn pondered the idea. His situation wasn't going to let him continue with school. Not until he could sign up for night classes. Besides, he knew he'd need to find a job soon.
"Well, I've been told I make an excellent sangria. Bloody Marys are easy enough. I'm a quick study." "Sure, Mike."
"You can start next week, and I'll show you the ropes,"
Michael said as he shook hands with his new bartender. When they reached the van, Malcolm thought of one final precaution and asked Anna,
"Would you happen to have a spare gallon can of gas in your van?"
She didn't know what he needed it for, but she did tell him.
"Yes, it's at the back."
She took out her keys and unlocked the van's rear door. She opened it and grabbed the spare gallon of gasoline. As she handed it to Malcolm, she asked,
"Here you are. What do you need it for?"
"I'm going to burn down the warehouse to make sure that the remains aren't found and unnecessary questions asked."
She understood, as did everyone who heard the plan. Malcolm jogged back to the door that Michael had knocked open. The candelabra were still lit, keeping a gloomy light in the room. He took the cap off the gas can and liberally poured gasoline on the bodies of the Master, Jake, and poor Mary Jane. He felt remorse for her loss, but knew there was nothing he could do now but leave her to her eternal rest. He also poured a good dose over the Master's severed head. Finishing that, he poured it all over the floor and flung some onto the walls for good measure. As he put the cap back on the now empty gas can, he walked over to the largest candelabrum. He grabbed it and tossed it onto the Master's body. As the candle's flames grew in the gasoline, spreading quickly over the floor and then the other bodies, Malcolm flew out the door. Meanwhile, Chris asked Anna if she was all right. She said that she was, though she was going to need some time to unwind after all of this. Chris felt the same and thought of a few ways that they could ease each other's tensions. After they kissed, Anna asked Chris a question that she knew she just had to ask.
"While Mary Jane was with you, you two didn't..."
Chris expected this question, and he answered truthfully.
"Honestly, honey, I don't know. I can't remember everything."
Dawn leaned over to Anna and whispered,
"He's telling the truth. Leave it at that."
She smiled, not because she knew the truth anyway, but because she also realized how much fun Dawn was going to have reading minds. At that, Dawn chuckled, agreeing with and confirming her assessment. When Malcolm returned with the empty can, Anna put it back in the van and closed the rear door. Anna opened the side door for everyone. As she started to walk up to the driver's seat, she decided that she wasn't up to driving right now. Dawn volunteered,
"Why don't you let me take the wheel for a while?"
No one objected, certainly not Anna, so she tossed him the keys and said,
"All yours."
Without blinking, Dawn caught them in midair and moved into the driver's seat. As everyone piled into the van, Don asked,
"So, where to?"
Chris closed the side door behind him, smiled, and said,
"I don't know about the rest of you, but I could use a very stiff drink."
"I'm with you, my dear."
"Well then, let's say we go visit my future place of employment."
"Good plan, love."
As Don pulled out onto the street, Chris pointed out,
"You might not need them now, Don, but I think you should turn on the headlights."
Don turned back to look at Chris and asked mischievously,
"Really, Chris? I thought they were already on."
As his eyes glowed red in the darkness, he turned back around, smiling, switched the headlights on, and drove off into the night, headed for Michael's bar. You've been listening to episode 13 of Lilith's Love, written and performed by Dan Charette, featuring the music of The Narrow Way, used with permission. Starring Michelle Selly as Lilith Thompson, Danny Cutler as Anna Foster, C.J. Fireovind as Mary Jane Hill, Dan Fireovind as The Master, Bob Gallagher as Malcolm, Jack Hosley as Jake, Carl Long as Christian Armstrong, and Jack Mangan as Michael Barrett. Sound effects courtesy of the Free Sound Project, which can be found at www.freesound.org. This audio recording is copyright 2009 and 2010 by Dan Charette and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.5 license. You are encouraged to share this audio file. Just don't sell it, don't change it, and let folks know where they can hear more. The novel, Lilith's Love, is copyright 1994 by Dan Charette and can be found at Amazon.com or ordered at fine bookstores everywhere. This is a work of fiction. All names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's peculiar imagination or are used fictitiously. Any resemblance to any actual persons, living, dead, or undead, events, or locales is entirely coincidental. To find out more about the novel, please visit www.liliths-love.com or the author's homepage at www.danscharette.com. That's DanSharette.com.